Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, the mission on this program is to understand what is actually occurring behind these headlines and discuss how these events will shape our world over the next 10 to 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in the discussion, is 877-300-7645. Speaking of calling into the show, I failed yesterday with Jason, my fault entirely, but he had called in on the last segment, had something he wished to discuss, and neglected to push the talk button. So, Jason, I apologize if you're calling today. We'll go directly to you. I received this email from a friend this morning. It reads, CNN has been featuring one of the spokesmen for the Muslim Brotherhood all morning. His name, Jihad al-Haddad. Jihad al-Haddad. They used this spelling once, but then quickly thereafter changed the spelling of his name to Jihad, G-E-H-A-D. I guess they figured that Americans wouldn't make the connection between Muslim Brotherhood and Jihad if they misspelled his name. Kind of makes you wonder, though, when you see that kind of deliberate action as to whether or not the media is complicit with the cover-up. Apparently, the Egyptian military has issued some 300 arrest warrants for Muslim Brotherhood members. We're going to speak later this morning about the general that Morsi appointed that made the decision to impose the military coup. This email goes on. He says, Yada, you've often talked about how events in Egypt would ultimately figure into the fulfillment of scriptural prophecy, but have said that the timing, based upon what was happening in the Islamic world, and particularly in Egypt, with them becoming fundamentalist Islamic, seemed to be too accelerated. Funny how things worked out, huh? This is from Jim. It is interesting, and we've talked about that, when the fundamentalist Muslims, through the Muslim Brotherhood and the Salaf Party, won more than two-thirds of the seats and ended up dominating the Constitutional Convention and wrote what was essentially a Sharia-based constitution for Egypt, turning Egypt from a military and secular dictatorship to a Islamic theocracy in a matter of months. The rallying cry was to destroy Israel and kill Jews. And that's really what Egypt's military exists to accomplish. Egypt doesn't have any enemy who has any interest in invading Egypt. Oh, their military, the United States spends about $1.3 billion each year to support, is not a defensive force. It is designed strictly as the sharp end of the stick to attack Israel. That's its only purpose. And so here you are in a situation where the Muslim Brotherhood, having taken over control of the military, has it in their gut enraged to destroy Israel and to actually deploy it. And the people of Egypt would be wholeheartedly in support, believing that their God would enable them to prevail. And so how in the world, with Egypt in the control of the Muslim Brotherhood, were we going to endure the next, really, 11 years before World War III begins? The scripture is quite clear as to the beginning of World War III. It begins in the first year of the tribulation. It is a direct aftermath of the beginning of the tribulation, which is a peace treaty that is reaffirmed with many nations. It is associated with a nation that is described using 13 adjectives that is a dead ringer for America, thinning Israel at the waist, robbing and looting the country by giving up, forcing to give up Gaza and then the West Bank. And then when Israel is wholly vulnerable, it's going to be the catalyst for an all-Islamic assault on Israel. And so that, for that to happen 10 to 11 years from now, something had to slow down the process in Egypt. Now, could this be it or just one more bump in the road? It's interesting nonetheless. Now, the head of the Egyptian army appeared on television yesterday announcing the suspension of the Constitution. When the head of a military unit appears and makes a speech and says that the Constitution has been suspended and that the elected government is no longer in power, there is a word for that. It's called a military coup. That is precisely what happened in Egypt. Yet yesterday I was listening to the radios. I was driving here and there, and they had all sorts of experts on the Middle East talking about, oh, how this is ushering in an opportunity for real democracy. And it is rather astonishing that we could be in a situation where experts on this part of the world would say, well, now what you have is the real opportunity for democracy in the midst of a military coup. But it certainly does explain the reason that Americans seem to be so lost regarding all of this is that the people that they listen to as experts are absolutely foolish. In fact, I heard one who was on one of the largest national radio shows said that, well, we shouldn't be surprised because it's summertime in Egypt, and the reason that you had all of these protests is people get really angry in Egypt during the summertime, and that's really the cause of all of this. So what do you think, Larry? Do you think that the cause of all of this was because it's hot in Egypt?
No, not at all. I do think that that the Obama administration ushered in something that they weren't interested in over in Egypt. I do think that. But I will tell you right away, a friend of mine over in Washington State right away saw one of the two leaders. You know, they're going to split it between a Christian and a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
There's still going to be a religious outfit, in other words. But the Muslim that's in power is extremely pro-Iranian regime. That's the guy that's going to step up next. So...
Yeah,
but you're not going to get democracy over there.
Yeah,
but you know, the people in Egypt at least might have taught the Americans a lesson as to how you throw the bums out. I don't know.
Yeah, the fellow that is the Muslim is the fellow that ran interference for Iran at the United Nations. He was the United Nations. Established for the non-proliferation of nuclear weaponry around the world. And so he was always the guy that was running interference so that the Iranian program would be presented as if it was for the peaceful generation of electricity, which, of course, is laughable. But that's the guy that is the quote-unquote Muslim in the mix. It is the reality here is that neither the Supreme Court head nor the head of the Copt Church nor the nuclear negotiator are in control of Egypt. The person that's in control of Egypt is General Sisi. He is, while he made his speech before Pope Taradros II, the head of the Coptic Church, and the fellow that you were mentioning, Mohammed El Baradei, and both of them made short statements after the speech, they were there as window dressing. Now, it is true that the Copts saw this as their opportunity to stand up to the tyranny that they had been experiencing as a result of Egypt becoming a fundamentalist Islamic state.
And you can't blame them for that when they have their own people being, you know, crucified and burned alive on the streets. Sure.
Yeah, I'm in complete understanding with why they would do this. It's going to be counterproductive for them. It's going to turn against them because they represent between 9 and 10% of Egypt's population, and the secularists that Mohammed El Baradei is representing might comprise about 15 to 20% of Egypt's population. So between them, at the far extreme, you have about 30% of Egypt's population. So what's going to happen when they do the same thing they did once before? And they have popular elections, one person, one vote, and they go back to the polls. What will have changed that will cause the outcome to be different than it was the last time, where the Muslim Brotherhood and the even more fundamentalist Salaf Islamic Party won 65 to 70% of the seats? How's the outcome going to be any different? So if we're trying to bring in democracy, one person, one vote, and these two minority groups, which were linked the last time, are linked once again, and they get 100% of the vote out for their group, and that totals 30% for a secular government, how is it that that's going to be a majority over the 70% that voted for fundamentalist Islamic government the last time?
Well, it won't be. You know, one of the things that we know is that, you know, leaders that are elected today in countries, I mean, these aren't grassroots efforts by and large. They're people that are installed.
Oh, of
course. They're put in powerful positions within political parties within the countries.
Yeah. General Sisi, who's right. General Sisi, who's now in charge. You know where he was trained?
No, I don't.
Take one guess. You want one guess?
I'm going to guess the U.S.
There you go. That the United States is the one who trained him. And while we were training him, the big concern over him was that he was a fundamentalist. He is not a secularist. In fact, it could be argued that General Sisi, the man now in control of Egypt, is more of a fundamentalist Muslim than was the
Morsi.
Morsi, the man that he deposed. And Morsi chose him because he was a fundamentalist. His wife never leaves the house unless she's in the full hijab. You know, that's not just wearing the veil. I mean, she's in the tent.
Wow.
Yeah. So this notion that, oh, wow, we have now the military and they're secularists and boy, isn't this going to be great for Egypt? No, he's playing these other two as fools. And by the time that this is done, the Muslim Brotherhood, who has their own militias now, they're going to devastate both of these groups.
And here I was blaming global warming the whole time.
Yeah, well, it is. You know, that's the expert that they had on Clear Channel, you know, the largest radio affiliate in the world, and on their lead program yesterday midday, their foremost expert was saying, "Yep, this is all happening because it's hot." Well, the news, this is from CNN. Many of the Islamists have armed themselves with makeshift clubs with shields made of pot covers and metal scraps and hard hats. And they were small scuffles with better armed soldiers. Some soldiers fired their weapons in the air, but the military forces held back. The soldiers were also seen barbed wire fences and barriers around barracks where Morsi may have been working. Mr. Morsi's senior foreign policy advisor, Essam Haddad, this is now the fellow that is Jihad Haddad, issued an open letter Wednesday afternoon on his official webpage, lamenting what he called an imminent takeover of Egypt's first freely elected government. And that's exactly what's happened here. I mean, I despise Islam. I despise the Muslim Brotherhood. But the reality is the majority of Egyptians are fundamentalist Muslims. Democracy is tyranny of the majority over the minority, and that's what they got. That's what we put in place in Iraq. That's exactly what our invasion caused even in Iraq. Why are we surprised?
Well, I don't think we are surprised, and I don't expect that the Egyptians are going to clean up their society or their way of thinking at all. it can't be done. And no, they're not going to have, you know, a democracy, if you will.
Well,
but they're going to always have a dictatorship.
That's the
nature of the beast over there. It has been for thousands of years.
Well, they caught a democracy for a year. That's how Morsi was elected. You know, they've got a democracy in Iraq now. And the reason that terrorism is up a millionfold in Iraq versus when it was a dictatorship, the reason that Egypt has become a savage place where women are routinely raped and where the economy has faltered to the point of bankruptcy is because they got what they wanted. One person, one vote.
I think they had, 94 cases, at least that's what I read, 94 reported cases of gang rape during this.
During this coup that the military stepped in on behalf of those who had raped nearly 100 women in gang rapes. Let's talk a little bit about President Mohamed Morsi. Morsi swept aside the aging commanders, remember, of Egypt's military. There was a period of time where Morsi said, I'm suspending the constitution. I am the head potentate. Nobody can threaten me. I have total and complete autonomy and authority in Egypt. That was about, 9 months ago? And during that time, the first thing he did is he fired all of the generals and field marshals of Egypt's military. And when he did that, he handpicked one fellow, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, to be head of the Egyptian military. And so we have to look at why did he choose this this person, and why did this person now choose to depose him? And what we find is that now Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is the dictator of Egypt. Oh, I know, there's window dressing. He's got these two people standing on his side, and he's said that the country will be run through the head of the Egyptian Supreme Court. But who made that decision? And if he wakes up tomorrow and says, you know, I don't like what you have said, Mr. Supreme Court Judge. And if he wakes up tomorrow and says, you know, I think I want somebody else to be my puppet. Yeah, don't you think that's what's going to happen?
Well, of course. And he got green-lighted somewhere. I mean,
right.
He did.
Yeah.
You know,
so fast.
He didn't just get there by accident.
Right.
You know,
yeah. It was this. This article from Reuters says, fast forward 1 year, and now this is the general who is poised to sweep aside the president. At the time of his appointment last August, so, you know, when you're dealing with somebody who was handpicked to head the military, and that person a year later decides to depose the person who pronounced him head of the military, well, right away, you know, well, this maybe is a guy we ought not trust.
Good. So you don't think it was an accident, huh?
Well, you look at it. Well, just look at it. You've got the head of state, freely elected head of state, appointing this man, saying, I trust you to be head of the military. And then a year later, the man that he appointed turns against him. He betrayed him. So you think this is an honorable man or a man who cannot be trusted?
Well, it'd be a man you couldn't trust.
Right. So in August, the choice of Sisi, a little less than a year ago, seemed to suit both Morsi and the younger generation of army commanders seeking promotion after years of being under older generals like the 78-year-old Field Marshal Hussein Tantwani, Mubarak's defense minister for 2 decades. The army had produced the autocrats that ruled Egypt for the previous 60 years. It had run the country itself during the tumultuous 16 months after the revolution that toppled the last general to serve as president. And it seemed reluctant to hand over power to Morsi until the new president briskly dispatched the field marshal, Tantwi, and a host of other commanders, pushing them into retirement. The Egyptians wanted their soldiers back in the barracks. They wanted their soldiers actually in Israel destroying. And the charismatic, chisel-jawed Sisi looked like the man who would keep them there. Over the course of the next year, Sisi warned of unrest and political divisions, but repeatedly held firm in asserting that the Army should not return to politics. So over this 10 months, he has said the Army should not return to politics. So when he said that, was he trustworthy?
No, he intended to take the place over, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
I don't think revolutions happen by accident. They take money, they take planning, they take time. I mean, that's the way a revolution works. It doesn't happen because some guy tweets somebody else on a cell phone. It doesn't work like that.
Who is the benefactor? Who pays for the Egyptian military?
I think that the U.S. does.
Yeah, $1.3 billion a year. And so, the old adage, he who has the gold makes the rules. The armed forces, the loyalty to the people and the nation, are loyal to the people and to the nation, Sisi said in November, when Mercy supporters and opponents clashed in the streets over plans to introduce a new constitution. Sisi finally ditched his refusal to pick sides on Monday, announcing a dramatic ultimatum that gave Mercy, the man who had chosen him, just 48 hours to agree on a power-sharing deal with his rivals. Now, this man was elected by a two-thirds majority. We haven't had a president elected in the United States by a two-thirds majority in a very long time. And yet, the military said, you will come up with a power-sharing deal with the two groups of minorities, or we're going to intervene. Now, the career military man, Sisi, was groomed for a leadership role. It happened long ago that he was prepared for this. He was groomed for a leadership role after serving top roles in the command, intelligence, and diplomatic branches of the armed forces. Among his previous postings were stints as the defense attaché to Riyadh, to Saudi Arabia, and command positions in the Sinai Peninsula, which borders Israel. So he worked with the wellspring of Islamic jihadism, the fuel for Islamic jihad, which is Saudi Arabia, and then he was dispatched to be the sharp end of the stick pointed at Israel. He had been carefully prepared for a high command position, said Robert Springborg, an expert on Egyptian military based upon the Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. Apart from his comparative youth among ranking officers, two other attributes made him a good fit for the Islamist Mercy, seeking a new generation of leaders. You see, Sisi is a devout Muslim. His wife wears the hijab, the full body covering. We'll return to Shattering Myths and consider what is known about Sisi in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're going to continue with the story. So we have some idea who General Sisi is, the new commander and the new dictator of Egypt. This article was written by either CNN or by Reuters. Said after attending the U.S. Army War College. Yep, that's where he was educated, so your guess was correct, Larry. After attending the U.S.
guess, just a shot in the wind there, you know.
Yeah, the U.S. Army War College in Pennsylvania in 2005, he was comfortable with the United States, which funds Egypt's military with $1.3 billion a year. Well, at least he was comfortable with the fact that the U.S. government is training Muslims to fight and then arming them to fight, which I'm sure pleases God no end. Insiders in the U.S. government and military were aware of him. He was a name that was often mentioned when people talked about the next generation of leaders in Egypt. He had a favorable reputation among those who worked with him in the U.S. military, although his coursework was described as showing Islamist leanings. Springborg said, Islamist ideology penetrates Sisi's thinking about political and security matters, citing material Sisi produced while at the course. He's a fundamentalist, man. He is a jihadist.
Well, sure he is. Of course.
Steve Gurris, a retired Army colonel who was Sisi's faculty advisor at the college, described him to Reuters as a serious student and a pious Muslim. Leaders were initially wary of Sisi, especially after remarks made defending the Army's practice, later disavowed, of conducting virginity tests on female protesters who claimed that they were abused. According to Zogby and their poll published last month, the Army as an institution scored a 94% confidence level. Yeah, the Egyptian Muslims love the notion, and they're all egotistical, that, oh, their military, they can really take it to Israel. Well, every time they have fought Israel, Israel has taken it to them, but ever delusional are the natures, is the nature of religious individuals. About 60% of the non-Islamists favored temporary return to army rule. So 60% of non-Islamists, that would be 60% of 30% of the population, wanted this to happen. Well, almost all Islamists, so that would be 95% of 70% of the population, were opposed to this. Sisi has carefully nurtured public support for the army in recent days, sending helicopters to drop Egyptian flags on cheering protesters. The army's dramatic reentry into politics was not inevitable, said Michael Wahid Hanna of the New York-based Century Foundation. The army was not angling to get back in and rule, and Sisi in particular was not among the minority hawks within the army leadership keen on reasserting such a role. Oh, so he had no intention of doing this. He did it because why? This is not what he wanted to do. He did it because why? Because a million people around Egypt were protesting. I mean, how many times did millions of people, sometimes as many as 3 million people, in Tahrir Square alone protest in favor of the Muslim Brotherhood? And now you're telling me that because people are protesting in Egypt in large numbers, that he had no choice? The two minority groups say that, you know, it's time to do away with the freely elected government. And this man was given no alternative but as the head of the military to go against the man that appointed him.
You know, the bigger question here, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I'm not, you pointed out the facts, and I mean, they are the facts. And we know that these people aren't philanthropists. I mean, that's not the business.
No.
I do wonder who gave him the green light to go ahead, who installed him. That's my wonder.
This is interesting. He said Egyptian military sources say that Mursi's call last month for foreign intervention in Syria was a turning point. Mursi's Brotherhood went further, backing calls for holy war, for jihad, rhetoric that alarmed a military that had spent decades hunting down radical militants. Now, that's not true. Mursi appointed a radical militant, a fundamentalist jihadist, in Sisi to be head of the military. So he wasn't concerned about aiding and abetting jihadists. But why does Egypt's military exist? We talked about that at the beginning of the program. What is the purpose of Egypt's military?
Well, probably to be, obviously it's controlled by the U.S. I mean,
well, no, the purpose of Egypt's military is to harass Israel. That's their enemy.
Well, that's their main goal.
Right,
sure.
That's right. The reason that they're beloved is because Muslims believe that Egypt's military will ultimately prevail against Israel and kill Jews and destroy the land and bring the same hellish conditions on Israel that are experienced in the rest of the Islamic world. That is the purpose.
You have to say Egypt is one of the more bizarre places on the planet. I'm sure you've been there.
You're right. I have. Yeah. So that's the purpose of the military. Mursi says, you know, I think, and the Muslim Brotherhood says, we should declare holy war, and we should go off and fight on behalf of the Sunnis that are the fundamentalist Muslim jihadists that are waging civil war against Assad, who is a Sunni. And so here's the Sisi's, the new head of the Egyptian military. And he said, no, that's not our purpose. Our purpose isn't to get involved in an Islamic civil war. in Egypt. That's a wrong direction. Our purpose is to be the sharp end of the spear against Israel. That was the thing that was the tipping point. It had nothing to do with forming a fundamentalist Islamic government. It had all to do, what's the purpose of the Egyptian military? It's right back down to the same situation we have with Hezbollah. Hezbollah wanted to avoid engaging in the civil war in Syria. Why? I mean, Hezbollah is clearly...
Well, their purpose is to harass Israel. Yeah.
That is correct. And they want to use their jihadists, and they want to use their rockets and their weapons and their bullets and their guns
Israel.
On Israel. That is their purpose. And so they finally did engage, and they turned the war. There is no real significant stronghold anymore for the rebels. They turned to the war. And so as that was happening, Mercy says, yeah, let's call a holy war. And now that the war has turned in favor of Assad, let's declare war and let's join the jihadists. And Sisi said, no, you're not going to do that. Now, this is a quote from Springborg, who is an expert on this man. He says, this does not mean that Sisi gives up on the idea that Islam shouldn't be the most important consideration in Egyptian national security policy. But this is not the war he wants to fight. It means that he looks at the world from an Islamic framework, so he would not want the whole project of Islamization to be destroyed. And that's what's now in the offing because the Brotherhood has so mishandled things. Sisi probably feels, to some extent, betrayed by Mercy and the Muslim Brotherhood, who have mishandled things so badly. So does he want a secular government, this fundamentalist Muslim general?
No, of course not. No.
Of course not.
He's all in with the Iranian regime, and you know anybody that could do
yeah.
that.
He is all in. I'm going to share a quote that our beloved producer sent me earlier this morning because it really speaks of the mindset of governments around the world. It speaks of the mindset of the United States government. It speaks of the mindset of Sisi and the Egyptian government. Thomas Jefferson. Governments constantly choose between telling lies and fighting wars, with the end result always being the same. One will always lead to the other. Think of that. Governments constantly choose between telling lies and fighting wars, with the end result always being the same. One will always lead to the other. Did we not get involved in virtually every war the United States has fought based upon lies?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, almost every war the United States has engaged in has been based upon lies, and particularly the most recent ones.
I was blown away to find out that Pearl Harbor was a stand-down operation. You know,
yeah.
But it's actually taught in the colleges, that war colleges that way.
Right.
People today, though, you tell them that, they go, are you serious?
There's a group of people that benefit when the masses surrender their liberty, they surrender their lives, they surrender their coin to rally around their governments to fight wars, that they win financially, they win in terms of their covetousness of power, they win because of their bloodlust and their sense of control that you have over a country that is at war when such wars are fought. I mean, World War I in particular, the United States engaged exclusively for the benefit of a banker, J.P. Morgan. I mean, the whole sinking of the Lusitania was designed specifically to deceive. The Gulf of Tonkin incident.
You had it on both sides.
The Gulf of Tonkin incident that caused America to engage in a war that left a bad situation worse and the death of 60,000 American... young men and women, did not happen. It was a known and deliberate lie. The State of the Union speech by President George W. Bush, where he said that the smoking gun is going to be a mushroom cloud because of the fact that that Saddam Hussein had imported tons of yellowcake uranium from. That was a complete lie. And so we went in and made a country worse. We broke it.
Oh,
and sacrificed a million lives and $6 trillion worth of our treasure.
Well, you know, I think the thing that kills me the most about this act is that they'll go in and they'll kill a million people, right? And
yeah.
They'll shoot people on bicycles today. They really will, to get a kill.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and what's amazing here, too, is if you look at the only potentially justifiable war that the United States has engaged in, and the only one that's even remotely justifiable, is the Pacific War and World War II. And if you look at that, the Japanese were given a sitting target by a military that had specifically stood down, and they killed 3,000 American soldiers, military on military. And so what did the United States do? They sacrificed 300,000 of their own children to avenge the death of 3,000. You tell me how that's moral. And they ended the war by being the most terrorist nation in world history.
The very fact it was a stand-down operation means it wasn't justifiable. It means that the political actors and the high-ranking military that were involved in that stand-down operation, instead of being idolized and canonized, should have been shot.
Let's just say that it happened because we were asleep at the switch. Let's just say that it happened because we lined up all of our little airplanes and we lined up all of our little ships and we were all sleeping on the job. Let's just say that it was sheer stupidity. You tell me how sacrificing 300,000 lives of your own children avenges the death of 3,000.
Well, you're thinking clearly here. Of course it doesn't.
How is that moral? Yeah, how is that moral? Why would you claim that is a great victory?
Well, you could only do that if you were the banker making the money that was making the tanks or whatever.
Yeah, the ships or whatever it might have been. Why don't I turn to a story in Egypt because it explains the nature of Islam. This was the author of the article I was discussing yesterday. Her name is Nina Berle. She calls herself an investigative journalist, which is a crock. She said that she has reported frequently on the Middle East. Her latest book was The Fatal Gift of Beauty, The Italian Trials of Amanda Cox. She really ought to have stayed there as opposed to trying to comment on Egypt. She has some facts right, but she has the cause. I mean, she is absolutely out to lunch. But it's important to state the facts and then correct her relative to the cause. She said that Egypt has always been a place where life for women is nasty and brutish, if not short. Last year, a UNICEF survey showed that 91% of Egyptian women between the ages of 15 and 49 said that they were forced to undergo female genital mutilation. Now, this is done by
that's
the United Nations. Yeah, it's that high, 91%. It is the most savage secret that is kept in the Muslim world, and it's fairly ubiquitous throughout the Islamic world. And it is what that says is that mothers are so indoctrinated into this hellish dogma that they are willing to mutilate their own daughters, and they're willing to make certain that their own daughters can never enjoy a sexual experience, and that their daughters, therefore, are a source of money that can be sold to the highest bidder for the purpose of that bidder conquering them. And if you're a man that respects women, making love to the woman you have chosen to marry is only enjoyable if her pleasure is commiserate with your own.
Unless you're a rapist.
So what is the mindset in Islam that would cause Muslims to mutilate the ability of
mindset?
Right.
It has to mindset.
To mutilate 91% of Egyptian girls in this way. Says
Did
that
you say 91%?
91%.
Between what age? What ages?
Between 15 and 40. Well, the women that were interviewed were between 15 and 49. And so 91% of the women between 15 and 49 said that they had been forced to undergo female genital mutilation. The mutilation typically takes place when they're in their, like 12 years old, 10 to 12 years old. But 91% of them said that they had been mutilated as children. It is the underbelly of this sick religion. What it says is that the purpose of the religion empowers men to conquer and rape women. Why is it that the Islamic paradise is filled with perpetual virgins? The same mentality, isn't it?
Yeah.
The United Nations equity for...
too, by the way.
Yeah, that's right. There are there's a homosexual section in the Islamic paradise as well. Yeah, and Allah's bordello. So yeah, I guess you can go both ways.
The little boys with the big brown eyes or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's
look like saucers or
something. Bachi ba is what they call it in Islam, where they like the Afghan military, when they take over a community from the Taliban, the first thing they do is go door-to-door. They round up the prettiest young boys, and they gang-rape them.
They call it. Yeah,
sure
do. And by the way, I have a friend that worked over there, and he told me that the saying is women are for children, but little boys are for fun.
That's the
going thing. You know, the idea that there's no homosexuality, I'd like to dispel that myth in Islam. See, when you unnaturally separate boys from girls their entire life, they learn not to relate to each other. You know?
And
what ends up happening is they perpetuate far, far, far more homosexuality in Islam than there will ever be in a Western country, any Western country, including Denmark even. You know, I mean, you can go to any of the places that you think just go the most far out, and they couldn't hold a candle to most of Islam.
Well, In any place where women are disrespected, as they are in Islam, you're never going to love a woman. You'll have sex with her, but you will never love a woman because women are disrespected in Islam. You cannot have a civil society where women are disrespected. I mean, it is amongst many of Islam's fatal flaws, and it's a flaw that cannot be rectified. It cannot be resolved. Islam's overt hostility towards women.
Sure, they only have half a brain, and most of hell is filled up with women. It's amazing to me that you get attacked by women for
Prophet
Adoub. You know, you think they would say, I'm going to tell you, the Iranian women, it's a totally different thing. Do you know why? The Persian society was based on the love of their daughters. They think more of their daughters than they do their sons.
Right.
You know, they're like conquered by Islam.
Yes,
but
however,
they're not Islamic. They absolutely hate it. Most of them I know do.
Well,
and I know a lot of them.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the ones that you know are the ones that have fled, not the ones who remain.
Even the ones there are captured. I'm telling you, I know many of them within the country. They hate Islam. They hate it.
Yeah.
It's like living in Nazi Germany. It's where 20% of the population tells 80% what to do.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that the highest per capita readership of Prophet of Doom anywhere in the world is in Iran. The highest per capita readership any place in the world of Prophet of Doom happens to be in Iran.
Yeah,
99.3%, according to the United Nations, of Egyptian women said that they had been subjected to sexual violence. That's about the same level we see in the, it's a little higher. I think in U.S. military, it's 80%. The Invisible War, for those of you who have not seen The Invisible War, you need to see it. You can watch it free on YouTube. Google The Invisible War. It is a movie that is made about the abuse of women in the U.S. military. About 80% of women in the U.S. military have been sexually abused, and the government is doing nothing to protect them. And so the two most dangerous places in the world for women, where women are disrespected, is in any Islamic society and in the U.S. military. Now, what does the U.S. military and Islamic society have in common? Both are command and control regimens where there is no freedom, where there is no expression of free will, where there is no choice, where you are told what to do. It is the very construct that Satan wants to impose through his political and religious schemes. It is the very construct that made Sparta the most disgusting place on earth. And in these male-dominated regimes where free will does not exist, where there is no freedom, they manifest their frustration in the abuse of women. Now, this article that we were referring to from Nina Burle said whether or not that violence is political is worthy of discussion. No, it's not. And she even says, I believe it is, which means she is functionally stupid.
She's lost.
Yeah, you know, it's one thing. That means that she is not an investigative journalist. She is not what she claims to be. There is absolutely no political component to the abuse of women in an Islamic country. It is wholly a religious aspect.
Well, Yada, the only investigative journalism you find today are in places like this show. I mean, they're not considered mainstream media. I don't know of any investigative journalists.
No, not anymore. And she then writes, at the moment, no one even debates it. It's the elephant in the room. No, the elephant in the room is the realization that Islam is the most destructive, the most immoral code of conduct ever perpetrated on humankind. And yet it's being embraced, funded, and tolerated by the West. And it is as a consequence of that that we see this military coup in Egypt that is being funded by the United States replacing an Islamic theocracy. What a mess.